Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the bay that scare ya. Machado, Orbado, or Nolan Garanti.
Chihuahua with Rondo. Start sit and drop, and all you need to know. Outlaws, Rick Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Well, that's it for the fantasy baseball season 2016. In the books, let's recap. Let's talk about some of the themes, some of the strategies that may or may not have worked, and let's do some baseball awards. Welcome, everybody. This is Fantasy Baseball Today. Every week during the offseason, we're going to do a podcast. I'm Adam Azer, and of course, with Scott White. Hello, Scott White.
You and I are going to get to know each other even better.
Peas in a pod, my friend.
Yes.
Peas in a pod.
Yes.
I don't mind peas. We find out more and more about each other's food likes and dislikes. Kind of peas are one of my favorites.
I don't mind peas. I don't mind peas.
Yeah.
I don't mind a good split pea soup every now and then.
Haven't had that. I mean, maybe once in my life, maybe I've had a split pea soup.
It can be good. It can be awful. There's a high margin for error with the split pea soup.
All right, good to know. So I will only get it from a restaurant that specializes in it. So
reputable sources, yes.
Let's get into some baseball. First of all, how was 2016 for you? 2015 was tremendous for me. 2016, not as much. Not bad. Like I said, didn't win any leagues, but was competitive in just about all of them. Maybe a little bad break here or there, but not as good as 2015. What about you?
I won 2 of the 10 strictly fantasy leagues, which, 20% success rate. It's certainly ahead of the curve. I'll take it. I didn't have a chance in 3 of those 10.
I'm disappointed in you, I gotta tell you. 2 out of 10, I expected more from you.
You expected more? Only 3 of the 10 did I not have a chance. So 7 of 10, by the time the playoffs started, I legitimately had a chance of taking
good.
The title.
That's very good.
Yeah, that's not bad. And then there are 2 sim leagues I have going on. Because they're sim leagues, the playoffs can actually happen when the real playoffs are happening. Because they're based on, they're simulating based on numbers already accumulated. And I'm very much in the hunt of both of those. So I'm hoping I can get at least one more championship that way.
Me too. I'm hopeful for you because I'm very disappointed in 2 out of 10 for you. you let me down. Now, topic for next week's show, next week. What the heck is a sim league? Sim league has been explained to me about 7 different times. I still don't really understand it. So, we'll tackle that next week. It might be one of those things I actually have to see to really get it.
I think it's just been poorly explained to you. And I totally blame myself.
Okay.
It's really not that tricky of a concept. It's just hard to find the right words for it.
Okay, well, you think about it. You have a week to think about it. here's a stat of the day. It comes from Joel Sherman of the New York Post. Of the 251 players who had at least 330 plate appearances this year, 110, 43.8%,
wow,
had 20 home runs or more.
Wow. I knew it was a record for 20 homer seasons, players with 20 home runs this season, but I didn't know it was almost half.
It's almost like how many players are fantasy relevant that don't hit 20 home runs?
Yeah, it's a good question. Jose Ramirez is one.
Yeah, Billy Hamilton.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, guys who steal a lot of bases, sure. But Jose Ramirez, who steals some bases, but he's not a huge contributor of those, I think is probably going to be Exhibit A on that list. I'm having trouble thinking of any more off the top of my head. Who aren't also big base dealers,
You know what I'm going to do? All right, I'm going to go. This will be interesting. I'm going to look at the top point scorers, hitters in fantasy, and see how far down the list I have to go when I find someone who did not hit 20 home runs. Okay, so you can keep talking. Let's talk about some of the themes, Scott. I looked at the runs scored the last 5 seasons. These were the team averages. An average baseball team, last 5 seasons, scored 701, 675, 659 runs, 688. So 3 years in between 659 and 688. This year, 725. But you go back a little bit further than that. Like you look at the last 10 years, it was almost like teams were scoring even more than what we saw this year, about 750 to 780 years, then down to 701. So basically the last 4 years were very low scoring. 701, 675, 659, 688 runs, the average MLB team. Way down from what we saw the previous years, and now back up to 725. So it's not like this is the most runs we've seen in 10 years or anything like that. It's certainly the most in five, maybe the most in six. But I don't know. What are your overall thoughts about the offense coming back?
It was the most home runs in a long time. So it's just crazy the way the game continues to evolve, because stolen bases are as low as they've ever been. Home runs are as high as they've ever been. Runs scored, you know, on the high side, but not as historic as the home runs. So, I mean, it's just become a three true outcomes game. Still tons of strikeouts. Still that didn't change with the offense increasing. Just, you know, a lot of hitters who are going to give you all or nothing. And it's trending more that way. I mean, last year, you'll remember, we talked about how dominant of a year it was for pitching and how maybe our approach needs to start changing because of that. And, I mean, obviously it ended up being not a dominant year for pitching, and yet there were still plenty of dominant pitchers. Max Scherzer had 284 strikeouts this year. Justin Verlander, who, storied career, of course. But I think his 254 strikeouts were a career high. So still pitchers. I mean, it wasn't quite like last year where you had four pitchers put up historically low whips with, 220 plus innings, Greinke, Kershaw, Arrieta, and Scherzer. The numbers were a little higher, but still the elite crop of pitchers, I think, even further distanced themselves from sort of the average fantasy pitcher.
Well, they were pretty much all in the American League, right? Was there one sub three ERA, or in the National League, I mean, was there one sub three ERA in the American League?
I'd have to scan through that.
I think Aaron Sanchez might have like a 2.99 ERA.
He's is right at three. It may have been round up.
And he's the ERA leader. Yeah. Three is the ERA leader in the American League, followed by Verlander at 3.04, and Tanaka at 3.07. Meanwhile, at least the top five, I can look at the full list, in the National League had sub three ERAs. Kyle Hendricks, 2.13, Lester, 2.44, Syndergaard, 2.60, Bumgarner, 2.74, Cueto, Roark, Jose Fernandez, and Scherzer, all under three. So that's what, eight pitchers in the National League.
Yeah, but I don't just want to emphasize the, because obviously there are ways of dominating aside from ERA.
Yeah.
I mean, the second and third pitcher in head-to-head points were American League guys. Rick Porcello was number two, Justin Verlander number three, and then Chris Sale, Corey Kluber, David Price were all in the top 10. David Price, with his 3.99 ERA.
That's amazing.
Was in the top 10.
In points, right?
In points, he was 17th among pitchers in Roto. So still good. But yeah, I mean, format made a difference with him. And in Roto, see, Verlander was actually second. Porcello was fifth. So not huge changes. I mean, still same, basically the same names, just different order.
So I'm looking at top 50 hitters. I've done with points leagues. Guess how many top 50 hitters in points leagues hit fewer than 20 home runs?
Top 50 hitters with fewer than 20 home runs. That's a pretty big number. Ramirez is there. I would guess Starling Marte's there.
You'd be wrong about that.
Okay, I guess the injury kept Marte out.
Yeah.
I'll say four of the 50.
Six. VR, okay. 21st. Pedroia, 30th. Lindor, 33rd. LeMahieu, 34th. Jose Ramirez, 41st. Zobrist, 44th. Going to be probably about the same in Roto. A little bit different names. Like Eduardo Nunez in Roto with his 40 steals was a top, was number 34.
Francisco, but even he hit like 16 home runs.
He did hit 16.
And you mentioned VR. VR was 19. So
yep,
it's just almost a technicality with some of those guys.
Marte is a top 50 Roto hitter. So yeah, I mean, going into next year, tell me about how different your draft strategy is next year compared to this past year based on the hitting outburst.
I think you're going to have to be even more sensitive to how many home runs you're getting in the early rounds, assuming it's a rotisserie league. I think that's what would change the most, actually, is roto leagues. Because, I mean, it's just a higher threshold you have to aim for with home runs. I feel like, there's only, I don't know, maybe with your first four or five hitters, obviously I'll have to research this further as we get deeper into the offseason, but there, of your first four or five hitters, maybe you can only afford to slip on home runs once, and you better make sure you're getting stolen bases with that guy.
Yeah, this is a really tricky part, right? Do you approach it that way, like you need to have home runs, or do you approach it like, everybody hits home runs now, I can get home runs late?
No. Well, I don't know.
Right?
There may be a few scattered examples of that. You'd rather not have to. Chris Carter's going to go pretty late, and he led the NL in home runs. You'd rather not have to take the hit in batting average that you're sure to get with him if you don't have to. I would imagine Mark Trumbo, who led the majors in home runs, he's probably going to be top eight rounds, right? So you can't wait that long.
No.
He'll help you make up ground in home runs for sure. But like if you're just drafting 20 homer guys, which is easy enough to do, your first four or five picks are just guys who'll hit between 20 and 25 home runs. You're probably going to have an issue in that category. Because it's just not quite enough. It's too easy to get 20 home runs.
The pitching is interesting to me though, Scott, because you know, part of me says I want to take more pitchers early because if I can identify the ones that are still going to be dominant, even in this landscape of more home runs and more runs, then, you know, I can make up for hitting later and I should focus on those pitchers. But I think there's just going to be a select few. I don't think there's going to be more than, there's going to be more than a top 12 next year of pitchers that we think are going to be aces no matter what, you know, like, you can't put Salazar in that conversation anymore. I don't know that you can put Carrasco in that conversation anymore. Thinking about the guys who were high end number two pitchers, Chris Archer.
Right.
I don't know that you can feel that way about them anymore. So I feel like there's just like the aces.
Greinke, Keuchel. Right. It's a pretty long list. Garrett Cole.
Like even Aaron Sanchez. Like nobody's going to value him as an ace, right? It's just
too risky. He doesn't have the strikeouts. You're right. It's going. I think it was 17 deep of guys I was willing to call an ace coming into this season, and it'll probably be more like 12.
I feel like Verlander's
joined that group. Syndergaard's joined that group. They weren't there last year for me.
I feel like you're going to have to get one of those guys. It's you know, it's going to affect my first picks. I never, pretty much never took a pitcher with my first two picks, and I'd be surprised if I didn't. At least one, probably one.
Having already taken a pretty close look at the first two rounds for next year, there are still going to be few starting pitchers drafted. There's Kershaw, yes. Scherzer, yes. I don't know. It's not even clear Chris Sale should be
Chris Sale, what do you have, a 3.30 ERA? It's weird.
So, I mean, after Kershaw and Scherzer, it's... because there's not going to be a surefire, this is the pitcher I want third. It's going
to be
Sale, Kluber, Verlander, Bumgarner. Yeah, Bumgarner. They're all going to be in that discussion, but you're probably going to see the same third round run on starting pitcher couple years.
And maybe that's what
I wouldn't want to be left out of it because finding a reliable starting pitcher is hard to do. Harder than ever after the year we just had.
Scott, let me read you an email from Chris. Chris says, "Dear Cabrera, Trout, and Donaldson, can we discuss the AL MVP race? There has been some debate among baseball writers and experts on websites discussing the MVP race. Check out the following two stat lines. Player A, 315 batting average. Player B, 318. Player A, 441 on base. Player B, 363. Player A, 550 slugging. Player B, 534. The player B has two more homers, 13 more RBIs, four fewer steals, one fewer run, and
57
fewer strikeouts.
Yeah.
Player A is Trout. Player B is Betts. And Chris's point is, why is it such a landslide for people that it's obviously Trout? Why not Betts? And I kind of agree. Betts has more homers, more doubles, same amount of triples, about the same amount of steals. And yeah, fewer walks, but also a lot fewer strikeouts. So I don't know. It really is a toss up to me. I could see it going either way. The dumb argument would be, well, Betts is on a better team. I hate that argument, but they're both good defensively. I think I would go Trout. I'm amazed at what he's done, with the garbage around him. And I also think you look at the power numbers. If the power numbers. If Betts played at Angel Stadium, I feel like Trout would put up better numbers than Betts. So that would be my deciding factor. But who's your AL MVP?
Well, I think the reason you're seeing a lot of people say, well, it's obviously Trout. I mean, Trout has a full point of war over Betts, and that's for a couple different reasons. One, 80-point difference in on-base percentage is probably the biggest difference between any of those stats you just listed off. I mean, on-base percentage is obviously very important. The ability to avoid outs is the most valuable thing a player can do. So I get that. I think Trout has been a better player in a real life sense than Betts has. Now, you know, fantasy sense, Betts actually outscored Trout in points league, so you have that. But obviously, that's not playing much of a role in the MVP discussion. I kind of lean Betts on this, even understanding why Trout was better. And maybe I'm just looking at it kind of journalistically. And hey, it's journalists who vote on the awards, so. I mean, in terms of accuracy of predicting it, maybe that makes sense, if nothing else. I just feel like part of what should go into the MVP consideration is impact felt by the sport. And I know you just said you hate, oh, that he's on the better team.
No, come on, don't do it.
But when you have a division-winning team versus a terrible team all season long...
Oh, who cares?
Bet's season... has a greater impact on history.
Oh, Scott, this is not what most valuable player is. The most valuable player to his team. I mean,
well, that's what you say. That's what some other people say, and it's fine to feel that way. I don't criticize, but it's straight up not fine to feel the way you feel.
I am not accepting the way you feel.
I don't accept that attitude. I reject it. There are plenty of ways to interpret this
award. It's such an unfair way, because then Mike Trout may never win an MVP award for the rest of his life, because the Angels are terrible.
No, sometimes a player is so much better on a terrible team, he's so much better than the rest of the field that, okay, just give it to him.
Okay, I was watching a game on Fox or FS1 or whatever. A couple months ago, probably. And the reporter, like the sideline reporter guy, I don't remember who it was, but he had an MVP vote, and he was talking about the MVP race, and he said on the air that record was going to matter to him. And I wanted to fly to whatever stadium he was at and slap him in the face, because I think it is such a bad and unfair argument. It does not affect, it's just completely unfair. In fact, you want to talk about a player's accomplishments, doing it on a bad team is even more impressive than doing it on a good team. I wouldn't hold that against Mookie Betts, though. I wouldn't say, well, he's got more lineup protection. Of course, he's going to score more runs. I wouldn't hold that against him, but I'm certainly not going to take away from Mike Trout because the Angels were bad. It's not his fault. I mean, you take Mike Trout and put him on the Red Sox and Mookie Betts on the Angels. Are the Red Sox any worse or what? Definitely not.
I don't disagree with your arguments. I just agree with the process by which you decide the MVP. I feel like award winners should encapsulate the story of the season. And the Angels were not a story this season, ever. They were never.
You know what's a great story? Mike Trout, amazing player, despite horrible team. That's a story for you, Scott White. Hot off the presses.
I don't think anybody really cares. I don't think when people look back at the story of the 2016 season, Mike Trout's going to be a big part of that story.
I just think it's unfair what you're doing to Mike Trout. What did he do to you to deserve this?
I don't really understand that either. I mean, I don't feel bad for people who don't win MVPs, particularly if they're great players.
If they deserve it, then they should still win it.
A lot of money. They're still getting plenty of recognition. Like, there can only be one MVP. It's kind of unfair to all the players who happen to play in the same era with Mike Trout that nobody else can ever win MVP. That's unfair.
No, I mean, look, Miguel Cabrera won it when he won the Triple Crown.
Yeah, but you have people who say he shouldn't have, for the same reasons that people say Mookie Betts shouldn't win now. So
I think Trout has clearly been
the best player.
If you want to win the MVP, be the best player.
If we just turn the MVP award into a war leaderboard, why I mean, why not just let that just
well, I made my argument without knowing anything about the war leaderboard. Okay, you know me; I would never even consider the war leaderboard.
Well, you're basically summing it up, though. I mean, you're not turning to that stat, but you're citing what goes into that stat as the reasons Trout should be the MVP over Betts.
I don't know. I took ballpark factor into consideration. Is that part of war?
I think so.
War never entered my equation, but
war doesn't show its work. That's kind of the annoying part about it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right. You know what? It's a good debate. We'll see who wins. Let's do the rest of the awards. NL MVP is easy, right?
Chris Bryant.
Actually, yep. The awards are fairly easy this year. The rookie of the years are. Rookies of the year. Give me Gary Sanchez.
I think the NL awards are easy. I think the AL awards are all very difficult.
No, AL rookie of the year is clearly Michael Fulmer.
I disagree.
You think it's Gary Sanchez?
I think it's Gary Sanchez. I think what he did was more historically significant. People say, oh, but he didn't contribute for as long as Fulmer. Well, A, Fulmer didn't have like a full season's worth of innings. And B, WAR, which is a stat that rewards accumulation, it was higher for Sanchez.
Well, then that good. Then now you know that I truly don't care about WAR when I make these arguments. Because no, it's got to be Fulmer. Sanchez was better per game, but Fulmer just gave them more. Sanchez played 2 months,
but he gave them more WAR in those 2 months than Fulmer did in five or whatever.
Wow. Okay. I'm very surprised to hear this. NL Rookie of the Year is Corey Seager.
Mm-hmm.
NL Cy Young, Scherzer for you?
Yes.
I haven't even really. It's got to be Scherzer, right? No, you know, no. It doesn't have to be Scherzer. That's stupid. I think it's Lester. I would go Lester.
Okay. Why? ERA? That's.
Yeah, it's half a run. A half a run is a big deal. And
yeah.
Kyle Hendricks has a 2.13 ERA. For God's sake, he deserves a little credit.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, Lester has a half a run better ERA, but Scherzer has 26 more innings. He has nearly 100 more strikekeouts.
The strikeouts mean nothing to
me. Fewer base runners, 9.97 whip versus whip. Like, I'm not just turning Cy Young into an ERA leaderboard.
I feel like Cy Young should be more about ERA than any other stat. Maybe FIP or something.
Well, I think last year kind of derailed that argument.
But it shouldn't be about strikeouts. Strikeouts.
Oh, it should absolutely. Strikeouts should be part of it.
No, you shouldn't. That's the thing. Pitcher. If you're a great pitcher and you do it without strikeouts, you shouldn't be penalized for that.
It just depends how much better you are. No, I don't think Lester's even in the top three.
Oh, really? You know, I got to be honest with you. I didn't really give it much consideration. I kind of forgot about this one. I'm winging it. Bumgarner has a great case. Bumgarner might be the guy. I mean, he came up so big for them down the stretch.
No, actually, he faltered down the stretch, Adam.
He did?
Yeah, he was at his worst in like August and September.
Damn it, Scott. See, this is me winging it.
It's got to be Scherzer. He's just.
It does not have to be Scherzer.
I mean, just to give you an idea of how superior
he was. Everybody is obsessed with strikeouts
these
days.
He had like a 50-point advantage over the second pitcher in fantasy.
Because of strikeouts. Everybody is
and
so obsessed
big, strikeouts
with strikeouts.
Is a big deal. I mean, strikeouts is a big deal.
Strikeouts, if I'm a general manager and I'm evaluating pitchers going into the offseason, I'm looking to add a free agent, strikeouts are a huge deal. I understand the importance of missing bats, dominant stuff, I get it. But if I'm just looking at how a pitcher performed over a season, and one guy did it this way, and one guy did it with a bunch of strikeouts, it doesn't mean that the strikeout guy was better. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's just one avenue of getting to where you're going, and the innings hurt Kyle Hendricks. I think the fact that he only pitched 190
it
innings.
It hurts Lester, too.
Not really. He was over 200.
Yeah, but Scherzer had three starts worth more of innings.
That's a significant factor, but he also
three
had
starts.
A half a run higher ERA.
Okay.
And I'm sure he gave up more home runs, right?
It didn't really hurt the Nationals because they
it
only
the
lost seven of his starts.
I mean,
now I'm bringing win-loss record into it, which is, of course, yucky by today's, but that it kind of exemplifies how little impact that ERA had on the outcome of actual games.
Yeah, but I could say the same thing for Lester and his strikeouts. His lack of innings, lack of innings and strikeouts obviously didn't have any impact on the
You
games.
Were firmly in Camp Greinke last year is what you're saying.
I was in Camp Greinke. And the reason I was in Camp Greinke is because he pretty much never slumped. He was awesome. He had, you know, a couple hiccups here and there. He was awesome from start to finish. And Greinke, I thought, deserved it.
I mean, I look at those numbers. There's no question Scherzer was the most dominant pitcher in baseball this year. And then he gets the traditional stats, too. 20 wins.
Half a run ERA is a big difference.
296 ERA is still a great
it's
ERA.
It's great. He had a great year, but Lester had a 244 ERA. It's a big difference.
We don't always award the Cy Young winner to the lowest ERA.
You know what? If it were within like 10 or 15 points, I would totally agree with you. But half a run, it's a major deal.
Nah. I mean,
yes,
Kyle Hendricks,
I am having
Kyle
so...
Hendricks is Kyle Hendricks is half a run better.
I know,
than
but the innings kill him. But I'm having a great time on this podcast.
Much smaller
this.
Discrepancy between Lester and Hendricks than between Scherzer and Lester. But it's the innings that kill Hendricks.
It's not that much smaller, is it?
It's like
12.2 compared to what?
26.
That's not. I mean,
that's twice as many.
I know, but it's not that big. It's not like we're talking 50 innings here.
It's three starts worth. You get three extra starts from a
no.
Your
that's
best
that's
pitcher.
Important. That's significant. But they're not. But the starts aren't as good as Lester's.
Okay.
Okay. Lester, by the way, with a stinker on Saturday or Sunday. Saturday, I think.
Yeah, he didn't. Himself. He didn't. It could. It would have been a bigger discrepancy in ERA.
You want to have you want to have another fight? Who's your
sure.
American League Cy Young?
My choice. This isn't who I think is going to win, but my choice. Would be Justin Verlander.
Okay.
Yeah. We're on the same page?
No.
Oh.
No, you're wrong. It took me a while to, it took me a while to come around to this one, but, I think it's Zach Britton. I think
Zach Britton!
He's had one of the best years in closer history. He has not blown a save. He's given up four earned runs in 67 innings, and he's just been unbelievable. And so important. So important to that team. So. You know, Britton it is. And you know,
it's actually going to be, though, is Rick Porcello.
I really hope not. That would be dumb.
Look, I don't think it would be a disaster. I think it's fairly close between him, Verlander, Kluber, Sale. But,
yeah, I think he's obviously deserves to be top five, not like top three. He's had a great year, but no, I think it's gotta be, I think it's probably gonna. You think it's gonna be Porcello? I think it's gonna be Kluber. Although I haven't really read a lot of the writings and who people are favoring, I felt like it was gonna be Kluber.
I feel like the reasons you'd award Kluber it. I mean, Verlander beats Kluber in all those reasons. So I don't.
Okay.
Like I could understand why someone might vote Porcello over Verlander. That goes against my sensibilities, but I could understand it. I don't really understand Kluber over Verlander at this point because Verlander was the same kind of pitcher, only better.
If Zach Britton were Mariano Rivera and he played for the Yankees, he'd be the Cy Young Award winner. That's kind of my argument for it. You have to have a pretty amazing year to win the Cy Young as a reliever, and his year is as good, probably as good as any reliever's ever had, right?
Well, I feel like you have to be historically good, and you have to be going against a historically bad starting pitcher crop. And I don't think it turned out that way in the American League. I think there are enough deserving candidates. I mean, it's possible that the people who are willing to indulge the Britton argument and throw him a vote will be enough that the other options just cannibalize each other and Britton sneaks in with like a bunch of second and third place votes. He ends up the winner. But it would leave a bad taste in many, many voters' mouths.
Yeah, I don't think he'll win it, but I would personally vote for him. It's a fairly weakened AL Cy Young crop though, no? Not great.
Those are really good pitchers.
You know why, though?
Really good seasons. There's not a clear standout.
Because Kluber and Verlander were bad for about a month, if not more, for Verlander.
Yeah.
So I think that hurts a little bit. Now we'll see. That one's going to be really interesting. And AL, we did Rookie of the Years. Okay. I want to talk about some of the standouts here from week 26. Give me your quick thoughts on Hunter Renfroe, who batted .317 with an .800 slugging percentage in 35 at bats, four home runs, all at home. Hunter Renfroe next season.
I think he pretty much locked up a starting job for next season with his performance. He's already going to be 25. Power potential is not in question at all. I mean, he hits some monster shots, always hit home runs in the minors. Plate discipline is bad. I'm hoping He can develop into a JD Martinez type player that is kind of the pie in the sky evaluation for Renfro. But I think he'll probably be drafted as maybe a fourth outfielder type in rotisserie, borderline fourth, fifth, and then probably not at all because of the plate discipline concerns in points leagues.
All right, that's Hunter Renfro. How about Ty Block? Giants pitcher Ty Block, 8 shutout innings against the Dodgers with 6 strikeouts. Who?
Yeah, I didn't take a really close look at him because I don't think he's anything special. I believe his minor league strikeout rate was low at every level. And I wouldn't really anticipate him making a big impact next year.
Willie Peralta, man. How about 6 scoreless innings at Colorado on Saturday? I totally shied away from him as a 2-star pitcher in week 26 because of that Colorado start. But since being recalled, he had a 2.92 ERA. Peralta had 16 walks, 51 strikeouts in 61 and a third. So the strikeouts were not there, but, you know, he had a good start at the Cubs. He had a good start at Colorado. It was not great against the Cubs at home. Dominated St. Louis. So a very nice end to the season for Peralta. Are you drafting him next year in standard mixed leagues?
I don't feel like I can fairly judge him until I see the way he stacks up against the rest of the pitcher pool, because I'm not really sure how to evaluate strikeouts from pitchers anymore, because we did not, at least among the high end pitchers, we didn't see a clear correlation with strikeout rate and success like we usually do. So as good as Peralta was since returning from the minors, he was still less than 8 strikeouts per 9. That still raises some concern in me, but if they're among the up and comers got more strikeouts, if they didn't stand out from him in other ways, then yeah, I could see myself ranking Peralta so that he's relevant in mixed leagues going into next season.
Yolish Chacin, last 4 starts for Chacin, 24 innings, 17 hits, 2 runs, 5 walks, and 20 strikeouts against the Mariners, Rangers, and the Astros twice. Did Yolish Chacin do anything in the final month of the season to make you go, interesting?
This is the 3rd straight season you would have been able to ask me this. So I don't know if he's the king of September baseball or maybe, yeah, he is facing some weekend lineups. Though, I don't know. I feel like that can be overstated. I don't really make much of it.
Okay, Scott, how about these two guys who are 33 years old or will be 33 next year? Joey Votto and Robinson Cano. Joey Votto finishes as the number 3 first baseman in points leagues, number 4 in Roto. One of those first basemen who finished ahead of Votto was Chris Bryant, who's obviously eligible in other spots. Before the All-Star break, Votto hit .252 with 14 home runs. After the All-Star break, he hit .408. .408 for basically half a season with 15 homers and a .668 slugging percentage. 2 straight years, Votto batting around .300 with 29 home runs and an OBP over .430. Unbelievable. And Cano... Yeah, I mean, I didn't even really realize this until I saw, you know, I looked on the stats page for the best performers of week 26. He had 6 home runs this week, Robinson Cano.
Yeah.
He finishes the number 3 second baseman in points, number 5 in Roto. He hit 39 home runs.
39 home runs. Storied career for Robinson Cano, longtime first round pick in fantasy. This is only the second time he's hit even 30 home runs in a season.
Remember, he had a .927 OPS after the All-Star break last year. So Votto and Cano, is Votto a first round pick next year, and is Cano a third round pick next year?
I'd be more likely to buy Cano than Votto. Votto ended up being the 3rd best first baseman in points leagues and the 4th best in rotisserie. He just kept gradually working up his way up that list and I think took another leap there at the very end. But he doesn't measure up to other first basemen in home run power. And we've seen this kind of easing into the season from him before. He did it to kind of a lesser degree last year. So I feel like early second round, great, but there's no reason to take him in the first round. Second base is going to be, I've already ranked second baseman for next year, and I may have to revisit that based on the way the last week went with Cano. And with Brian Dozier, who in his final 14 games went 8 for 58, Looked like he was mid-September. He looked like he was a lock to set the record for home runs by a second baseman in the season. Ended up falling one short because he hit only one home run over those final 2 weeks.
And now he also had an oblique injury to end the season, but I don't think he was playing through it. I think it happened late in the year, like the last weekend of the year, basically.
I mean, what always concerned me about Dozier, even while he was hot, was that he was so sold out for power. His fly ball rate and his pull rates are both among the highest of any hitter. And he doesn't really do enough aside from home runs to afford any regression in that area. I mean, he's pretty much condemned to a low batting average because of that. He needs to hit a ton of home runs. And was it just this crazy power surge that, you know, we saw him begin to normalize at the end of last season? He's going to go back to being a 25 to 30 homer guy next year.
I got to use your words against you here, because you seem convinced that it was legit because he had the, what injury was he playing through last year? A hip injury?
Torn labrum in his hip.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was your argument. I mean, guys go through these horrible slumps. It just so happened to come, you know, at the end of the year, killed people in their playoffs, possibly. It's fair to wonder what kind of player Brian Dozier is. He's been streaky in his career.
I mean, I do think he's better than we saw 2 years ago, but he pretty much has to hit 35 plus home runs, I think, to merit a second round pick with what he does poorly. And I feel more confident in Cano than him. I mean, Cano's production was basically, I know he had a, you know, great final week, but you look at his month by month breakdown, it was pretty steady. There was no crazy extended surge at any point in there that would lead to as many questions as I have about Dozier.
I think so, maybe week one and week 26.
Yeah, those were probably the two biggest ones, but they were both pretty short lived, and he was still great aside from
that. Yeah, he was. And you know you're going to get a better batting average.
And Cano, there were some health issues that were largely unreported his first couple years in Seattle. So I don't know how much that should factor in. He's 34 years old, which is pretty old. So I don't know how much that should factor in. It's going to be second base in the second and third round is going to be a headache. I can tell you that much. I'm not really sure where I stand with all of it just yet.
I know at one point Cano was dealing with the death of his grandfather. He took that poorly. He took that hard. Excuse me. It may have affected him. So I think the scenario was right for Cano. He was healthy Figured out how to hit home runs in Safeco and had a 39 homer year.
And I didn't even mention the biggest question of all amongst early round second basemen is Trey Turner. What the heck do you do with him?
Well, let's save that for next week because we're running out of time I want to read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Ryan in St. Louis, dear Bono and the Edge.
I don't know who the Edge is.
Oh, come on. Yeah, you do. Well, you know who Bono is.
Sure.
And what band is he in?
You too.
And if you were a guitarist in U2, wouldn't you change your name to The Edge?
Okay, fine. We're a couple U2.
Yeah, U2.
Yes.
Do either of you play in any leagues with no bench spots? I'm in a roto league with no bench spots. How would this change your draft?
I have before. And I mean, the main way it changes your draft is you're obviously not drafting anybody who you don't expect to have a full-time job right away. But beyond that, it didn't really change that much. I mean, maybe you'll be a little more careful of injury-prone players, but that's obviously hard to predict who's going to get hurt. You just end up being a lot more active, and everybody ends up being a lot more active. Big-name players get dropped in these leagues, and it's just a normal thing.
I feel like, Scott, I wouldn't hesitate to take injury-prone players because the waiver wire has got to be – well, it depends how big your rosters are, but the waiver wire has got to be pretty good if there's no bench spot. So I draft Carlos Gonzalez. He gets hurt. I drop him. I pick up somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody good.
Yeah. I would hope you at least have a couple DL spots. He says he does.
He does. He does. Yeah.
Because, yeah, you'd hate to lose a guy for 2 weeks who's way too high end to drop, and you just have to take a zero for that time. That's what's really a backbreaker in those leagues.
Oh, yeah.
Should probably be even more than two DL spots, to be honest.
Okay, this is from Sam. I'm in a keeper league. We can keep 10 players. No draft spot allocation or anything. He's keeping Lucroy, Votto, Odor, Bregman, Corey Seager, VR. He's giving us basically like a lineup, catcher to first base, blah, blah, blah. So okay. Lucroy, Votto, Odor, Bregman, Corey Seager, VR, Dahl, Betts, Springer, and Kershaw.
Good list there.
I also have Darvish, and something is telling me to keep Yu Darvish. Do you think any of the 10 hitters above are less valuable than Yu Darvish?
I do. I think Yu Darvish is going to be in the ace discussion next year. I would keep him over David Dahl for sure. And assuming this is a categories league, I think Dahl's the obvious one to get rid of. If it's a points league, kind of a close call between him and VR, I think, but VR's steals potential is just way too high in categories leagues to throw him back.
Next email is from Andy from Washington, D.C. He says, Dear Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack. Oh, that's Biz Marquee, Just a Friend. Is that, oh, baby, you? I don't know. Is that what it is? No.
No idea. I recognize the song you're singing, but I do not know anything about its backstory.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. My question is about whether or not it's ethical to stream starting pitchers to try to win a categories league or try to win categories like quality starts, wins, and total strikeouts, to essentially give up on ERA, WHIP, and on base against. I've gotten some blowback in past seasons for doing this, but the commish always has sided with me. However, there is a rule to try to limit this that we can only have a maximum of 5 starting pitchers on our roster. So I guess he has to drop players. This is a family league. I don't want to be the a-hole doing something that is unethical, even if the commish says it's legal. Streaming pitchers, Scott, to win categories.
I mean, it's not unethical. It's not the way I want my own fantasy baseball leagues to play out. Like, I don't. It kind of goes against the spirit of fantasy baseball, I feel like, in that you're supposed to prove how well you can predict individual player performance and assemble the best team. And it kind of goes against the spirit of that. You're kind of just spamming the process, I guess. But I feel like if I was in charge of the league, I would just make a rule to prevent it. This it kind of a half measure here, a max of 5 starting pitchers on your roster. But
right.
You know,
look,
I think I would enforce either transaction limits per week or make it only weekly transactions, daily lineup setting, but weekly transactions.
Now, yeah, this is my general philosophy. It's subject to change on certain specific situations. But if you're not doing anything that's against your league bylaws, that's on the commissioner.
Yeah.
You know,
I would agree with that. Sure.
Yeah. Oh, you agree? How about that? And let's finish off with a keeper question. Oh, and let me apologize to Bill. Bill, I said I was going to read your email on the show. I'm going to read it on next week's show, where we have to vacate the room that Scott is in. So
yeah, we argued too much about award winners. Sorry.
Ah, there's never enough argument about award winners. Keeper question from Jeff. Jeff is in a 12-team, 6x6 categories league, $300 auction budget. You add $5 to the original drafted auction price. He already did that for us to make it easier. So he's going to keep Kershaw, Rizzo, and Bumgarner. Now he needs 4 more keepers. Miguel Cabrera for $34. Johnny Cueto for $19. Dozier for $21. Carpenter for $25. Murphy for $9. Fowler for $6. And Segura for $6. Oh, and Jackie Bradley Jr. for $1.
Okay, so I kind of have to recalibrate here because this is a $300 budget as opposed to $260.
So I'll read the names again for the listeners. Miguel Cabrera for $34, Cueto for $19, Dozier $21, Carpenter $25, Murphy $9, Fowler $6, Segura $6, Jackie Bradley Jr. It's going to be like somewhere between $1 and $5. They haven't calculated that yet.
I mean, I think you have to. Bradley has to be one. I think at only $6, Segura has to be one, even though I anticipate some regression next year. And then Miggy and Dozier, let's say. Those are the 4. Miggy,
not
Dozier.
Daniel Murphy at $9?
Shoot. Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, Murphy. I guess Murphy over Dozier. Well, maybe. I don't know, man. Yeah, 21 for Dozier.
I don't know about Jackie Bradley Jr. He's pretty streaky.
It's just so cheap, and he was you know, top 20 outfielder.
He's not that much cheaper than Murphy.
Yeah, Murphy's a must. I overlooked him at $9. Okay. So definitely Miggy at 34, definitely Murphy at 9, definitely Segura at 6. I think Dozier at 21 and Jackie Bradley Jr. at 1. It's hard without playing in the league to understand how exactly a $300 budget breaks down.
You could use an outfielder.
At face value, I'd lead Bradley, but I don't think you could go wrong with Dozier.
All right, Scott, we out of here. Thank you very much. I enjoyed yelling at you. My pleasure was all mine.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to have more on your side about the travel bets argument.
I hope so, because, man.
What bugs me more than anything else is the certainty. The kind of dismissiveness anyone who doesn't pick Trout.
I wasn't
fine
there.
I'm fine with people who pick Trout. I understand their reasoning. But
that wasn't me.
You can't hold everyone to your same reasoning. That's just me.
Yeah, that wasn't me. I think it's a toss-up. I really do. Betts had an amazing year. For Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week with another Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. See you later. Mazzara and Parra project to Elimora, Herrera, Cabrera. Don't let the bait that scare ya. Machado or Bono or no.